Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. The draft is over. Free agency is on its way, and the Knicks made some immediate moves, Alex.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, I guess, in some ways, and in many ways, not a lot to unpack, because I think that we mostly expected the Knicks to waive almost every player that they potentially could today, and they followed suit, and there was maybe even one or two little surprises in there. Also, a local player got signed by the Knicks as an undrafted free agent. Miles Powell is joining the Knicks out of Seton Hall, so we're going to break down that news a little bit too. For those that don't know, I actually had a little bit of time covering him when he was in high school, so this is pretty neat for me, so we'll get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and puck left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. It counts. And he makes
it. Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. In case you missed it, we had a ton of draft coverage over the last couple of days. Probably at this point, the one that will be the greatest point of interest will be the podcast we recorded last night, sometime literally in the middle of the night, summing up our thoughts on the Knicks drafting Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quickly and all the trades and machinations and weirdness that ensued on the way to get to that final result. So we did an hour on that. I think it was a really good episode. So if you haven't checked that out yet, please tune in. If you want to see our live reactions during the draft, you can go on to YouTube and look up the Locked On NBA live show. I will repost a link to that at some point on our Twitter as well. We got to talk with David Locke, the Utah Jazz broadcaster and our boss, and Chad Ford, the longtime ESPN draft expert. Most importantly, me and Alex had some funny reactions in there. It was a whole lot of fun. But Alex, today we move on. And it's sort of, I said this last night, but it kind of feels like the unofficial start of the season. And it's a little, again, as you noted in the intro, it's not like any of these moves were extremely shocking. But I don't know. I feel a little weird about it because it's almost like half the team from last year was just wiped off the floor in one press release.
Yeah, so I don't even think the Knicks have officially released it yet, but
No, they put it out.
Oh, did they just put it out? Well, credit where credit's due. I believe Steve Popper of Newsday had everything first as far as the names of players that were getting released today. But yeah, the Knicks, they declined Bobby Portis's team option. I believe Kenny Wooten also had a team option, and so did Theo Pinson. They turned all those down, and then they non-guaranteed, you know, there's a difference there because these guys get a small portion of their salary, which was $1 million each. Taj Gibson, Elfrid Payton, and Wayne Ellington. They did guarantee Reggie Bullock's contract, which was predicted, because no matter how you shake it, he's affordable at about $4 million for this next year for the production that he brings. But yeah, Gavin, I think it was pretty predictable. We already have some reporting out there. Our buddy Mark Berman had kind of a funny tweet where he was like, he leads it by saying, well, there's not going to be any Taj Gibson and Tom Thibodeau reunion. And then one sentence later goes, unless they bring him back at a lower number, which I think very well might be the case. I think, and Ian Begley, I believe, alluded to that as well. He also said there's maybe some interest in a reunion with Bobby Portis. I will say if they would bring back Portis, then all those the Knicks signed 5,000 power forwards jokes from last year might have some merit because they literally just drafted with their first round pick a guy that they expect to be like the future in Obi Toppin, who is indeed a power forward. And they have Julius Randle still on the roster. So unless Randle gets moved, I can't really see a Bobby Portis signing, but maybe they're already working the phones for a Randle trade as it is. But yeah, it, I don't know. I didn't find any of these to be particularly surprising. Ellington was overpaid and, quite frankly, had a terrible year last year. Up until after the trade deadline, at which point he turned it on and shot like 50% from three for 3 weeks. So thanks, Wayne. Just for that alone, I'm willing to spite cut him now. Elfrid Payton, probably that's good news to most people like us that weren't a huge fan of Payton's style play last year. So that's cool. Taj Gibson, I think, is going to come back. Portis maybe will come back. If he doesn't, I won't shed a tear, though I will admit, and I think you have said this as well, like, my opinions on him did change throughout the year, and by the end of the year, I felt at worst neutral about him, and at best kind of liked him sometimes, and now he played with the second unit, so maybe we'll bring him back. Theo Pinson, whatever. He was probably just salary flotsam to potentially include in a trade before draft night or whatever. But Kenny Wooten is a little surprising and a little disappointing. I think that's the only one that sort of caught me off guard in a way and was disappointing to me. They're keeping Jared Harper, it would seem, the guy that they picked up with their off waivers, you know, and added to their other two-way spot. But Wooten, I don't know. I know that you and I had talked about it before, and we sort of saw like a mini Mitch maybe in him. And he certainly had some eye-popping highlights for the Westchester Knicks. You know, just getting sky high to block shots. I mean, literal blocks where he got so high up that he was able to grab it with both hands and just come down with the ball rather than you know, swatting it into the third row. So it was pretty cool watching him with Westchester. And unfortunately, due to some untimely injuries and stuff, we were never able to see him suit up for the Knicks after he signed his two-way deal, because he signed it in February and then was staying with the Westchester Knicks for another week or two, and had broke his finger, I believe, in some sort of way that required surgery, and was going to keep him out about 6 weeks, which ultimately kept him out through the end of the season. And, you know, at best, we would have maybe gotten 3 or 4 games with him right at the end of the season if his recovery had gone as planned. So it was just kind of disappointing from that standpoint. I can't see a world where he's coming back to the Knicks now unless they're going to sign him to a, you know, regular NBA contract. But I don't see that happening. He already sort of put out the tweet saying, like, I appreciate New York for everything, you know, that they gave me and, you know, whatever shot they gave me and blah, blah, blah. But, like, on to the next one. So I'm having discussion about bringing him onto the main roster. So I don't know. Just feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity. Ultimately, he's a player on the margins, but that was the only one out of these. I mean, to your point, it is a little weird to see like the whole team from last year basically, you know, shoved out the door. But that was the only one, ironically enough, but the guy that we never got to see play for the actual Knicks is the one that kind of stings the most to me.
Yeah, I think I would really have liked to have seen Wooten play. I get how with Toppin maybe would have been too much dunking the MSG rims would have been at significant risk at that point on a night-to-night basis. I think Dotson to me is certainly the biggest impact in terms of an on the court loss and ultimately as a lot of people pointed out.
Oh yeah, I just realized I didn't even mention that in the news dump. So yeah, Dotson, they did not extend a qualifying offer to, meaning he's going to hit unrestricted free agency and not restricted free agency. Sorry to interrupt. I just realized like I didn't even include that news because I forgot amongst all the other guys.
Oh yeah, no worries. Yeah, but I mean to me that's probably the biggest. Basketball loss, and as a lot of people pointed out, Emmanuel quickly, even if he's not the exact same player, sort of fills the same niche as Dotson. And all I would point out is I think it's going to be like kind of one like frustrating that the Knicks, I mean, even if it was just for a second rounder, didn't trade him at the deadline. Two, it's going to be frustrating to watch him like play real minutes on a contender. Like I would hope he'd end up maybe a place like Golden State would be kind of interesting and have need for him now that Klay Thompson is sadly out for the year with a torn Achilles. I'd be interested to watch him on a good team just because I think it'll prove a lot of us on Twitter right who think he should have been playing a bigger role over the last few years. And we've said it a million times on this podcast, but all the lineup data showed consistently in a variety of configurations, the Knicks were a much better team when Damian Dotson was on the court. Inexplicably, he still didn't play a whole lot. Despite that, he was pretty inconsistent. The reason I'm not heartbroken about it is because I just don't think there's like a lot of upside there. Like I do think he's a good eighth guy on a good team, which, again, I don't know why you would just give up on that. But I don't think he's ever going to be like a really high-level starter or anything, just because he is on the older end, and he was older already when the Knicks took him. So clearly they really, really believe in Quickly. It wouldn't really make sense to keep both of them. So in that sense, I'm ultimately all right with it. I wish you could have gotten a little more run.
Yeah, my biggest thing with Dotson, like, and to be clear, it's not 100% certain that he's out of here, because really with the qualifying offer, it probably was as much or more than he's going to get on the free agent market. So, you know, it's difficult to say whether he's going to, like, for sure be gone from the Knicks or not. But assuming that he is, it's disappointing that, you know, he just kind of got some shots but never fully was given a chance. And, you know, we're pretty big proponents of, like, lineup data and, you know, trying to combine that with eye test. And, like, in both facets, he seemed like he was really a positive impact on both ends of the floor for the Knicks. Like, they were better on offense, they were better on defense. You know, they just, it was a better team out there generally when Dotson was on the floor, kind of a similar effect to Frank. But Dotson even kind of gave more in terms of box score stats a lot of times than Frank with his shooting and stuff like that. You know, obviously he hit he had one or two 30-point games, I think, his second year. So, I mean, he had, you know, the scoring chops to occasionally go off, and, you know, he had the defensive ability and rebounding to kind of be like a good glue guy. And it's just kind of weird to, you know, not be able to ever see him get a fair shake because of bad coaching, basically, over the course of his whole career so far. But it is what it is. Maybe he'll latch on somewhere else and be better. And to your point, you know, they did just get Quickly. You could argue you can't have too many, you know, middle of the roster, like, shooter defender types, you know, so it's always good to have another one of those in your back pocket. If they can get him back somehow for like a 1+1 veterans minimum contract or something, I think they should. But if they don't, then, you know, it's just kind of annoying, but ultimately it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I definitely wish that he would have gotten more of a shake with the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm certainly in agreement. All right, you want to move on to the Knicks signing, who, Alex, it's someone that you're intimately familiar with, Miles Powell out of Seton Hall. And I think I know you mentioned on the podcast one point, and I think I saw you mention on Twitter, one of the last like high school stars you covered when you were writing about New Jersey prep hoops.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, he was. I got to cover him when he was a sophomore and junior at Trenton Catholic. And then he went, I honestly don't remember the name of the school, but he went to a school, I believe, up in Connecticut after that for his senior year in high school. But he had already secured his commitment from Seton Hall at that point. So I kind of got to see him when he was like hot on the recruiting trail, and getting his, you know, commitment from Seton Hall. And, you know, he's grown a lot as a player. Just to give like a little mini scouting report, he cleaned up the awards this year for the Big East. I mean, and he was a finalist for the National Player of the Year on top of it. He, in general, is just kind of, he's, I would say he's like a undersized combo guard, kind of. He's not a point guard, but with Seton Hall, he was often tasked with bringing the ball down, setting things up himself, and often creating for himself because they had real issues with creating offense from anyone other than him. They often would play with two bigs. You know, they did kind of a Twin Towers thing, except for both their bigs. I'd be lying if I said I even remember the names, because I would watch Seton Hall just kind of when I could find them on TV. But both their bigs were kind of stone-handed and not particularly talented on anything other than really like defense. So he never really had anybody to outlet to in the middle that was reliable. Their shooters were extremely inconsistent. And I mean, Miles this year, if you look at his numbers, he averaged actually worse than his junior year. He averaged 21 points, 4.3 boards, about 3 assists per game, about a steal per game. But he shot 40% overall and about 30.5% from three and 80% from the line. But I mean, he was counted on to just be like the offense every single night. And if you watched any of the games around midseason with him, teams basically, because Seton Hall was actually pretty legit this year in large part thanks to Miles Powell. And, you know, they basically when he was playing, like he had to miss a few games this year, but when he was playing, like the other team would throw everything at him. They would throw doubles at him constantly, sometimes even like triples, just trying to get the ball out of his hands. So generating that offense became even more difficult for him, and he had to generate that offense because otherwise Seton Hall probably wasn't going to win the game. So, it was pretty difficult for him, I think, and he did as best he could, I think, on Hall this year. And he did even better his junior year, averaged 23 points, 45% overall from the field, shot 36% from three on almost 9 attempts per game, which, you know, is valuable. We've talked to Prez and others about the importance of being able to shoot pull-ups and create your own shots, and that if you can create your own threes and whatever, shooting 36% is, you know, way more valuable potentially than just a spot-up guy that can shoot like 39-40%. So he could do that. Like, he could for sure create his own shot. And, you know, he's on the smaller end. He's, I believe, only 6'1", but has like a 6'7" or so wingspan. So he should... hopefully, you know, he's never going to be a plus defender, but I think that he should at least be able to hold his own against ones and twos in the NBA, potentially. He's definitely not going to be able to defend down to a three comfortably at all, but should be able to hold up at least against ones and twos. And just in general, like, from my experience of seeing him, you know, he initially, you know, in high school, I mean, I'll say how it is, like, he was kind of a chubby kid in high school. Like, I would look at him and be like, this kid's not an elite athlete. Like, all he does is shoot. Like, when he was at Trenton Catholic, he was a shooter, period. And I saw him drop like 30, 40 points a few times, but it was mostly just because he was such an elite shooter and wasn't really creating too much otherwise. And I was just like, I don't really see it with this kid. I mean, good for Seton Hall that they're getting him. It'll be cool to be able to watch him since he's going to be local, but I don't know about it. And then when he got to Seton Hall, I saw the pictures like of him leading into his freshman year, and their dieting and conditioning program must have been great for him because he completely resculpted his body and turned into like, I mean, he's not like super cut up or anything, but he's in good shape now, you know, and clearly he was because he was able to play like, you know, anywhere from 30 to 35 minutes a game and shoulder the entire offensive burden of his team night after night. So he's in really great shape. He's a really hard worker. You know, I think he's going to be a good fit on the Knicks, hopefully. And, you know, there was some people that want to make the CAA jokes already because apparently he's rep by CAA. Maybe that was part of signing him. Who knows? But, you know, I think that this is a good one just on merit. You know, there were a lot of people that were really surprised that he made it out of the draft and went undrafted. So, you know, kind of similar to Trier in a way. This is one of those where I can really talk myself into it and, you know, talk myself into him being a good value here no matter what ends up happening, because he was one of the most prolific scorers in college basketball, period, and the Knicks managed to get him. So I feel pretty good about him. All in all, I don't know if maybe he's going to end. They haven't disclosed terms of the deal yet, so it's possible that they cleared Wooten to make way for Powell on their second two-way deal, along with Jared Harper. So I guess we'll see as far as that's concerned. But yeah, even if they sign him to like a 1 or 2 year guaranteed NBA deal, like on the main roster, I think I'd be okay with that. I think he's worth taking a chance on as a guy who, like, at his potential ceiling, you know, this is like his 100% outcome, but could potentially turn out to be like a Lou Williams kind of guy. That's a, you know, an electric undersized scorer, probably off the bench, that can get buckets for you in a variety of different ways. And, you know, has enough passing chops to, you know, at least not be like a total black hole like Trier was on offense. So I like him. I really like this signing. You know, this takes a little bit of the sting off of basically punting that second round pick last night, because, you know, I think that he has real potential as a, you know, a guy that could give you like second round value for sure.
Yeah, and I think he's someone who, if he had come out after his junior season, he would have been a second round pick. He was dealing with, I think you hinted at this, he was dealing with a concussion for large portions of last year, but he was much more efficient as a scorer his junior season when he was fully healthy. Was at 23 points, 4 rebounds per game, Shot 45% as a junior, down to just 40 as a senior. 36% from three as a junior, down to just 31% as a senior. 84% from the foul line, 79.5% as a senior. And I don't think it was just that he forgot to shoot. I think that he was hurt for a lot of the year, and the team, to your point, like had some issues. But he came back, and I did a ton of research on him last summer because I was supposed to broadcast a couple of Seton Hall's games in Europe when they were doing a tour over the summer, and then they ended up missing a flight, and I didn't end up doing those games. But I remember talking to like someone like on their coaching staff, and they were, or might have been their PR guy or B writer, I can't remember exactly who, but anyway, someone associated with the team, and they were saying that they thought Powell was going to be like a much better ball handler and passer, and was trying to turn himself into a point guard, because that was the feedback he got from the NBA after his junior season, that at his height, I think 6'2". It was going to be tough for him to play a two guard in the NBA, sort of like Emmanuel Quickley, and he was trying to work on his point guard skills. And again, just because the season sort of didn't go in an ideal fashion, I don't think he necessarily got to show that off. He averaged the exact same amount of assists, essentially his sophomore, junior, and senior year, and I think that's ultimately why he wasn't drafted. His teams just don't really see him as a point guard. But to your point, he works well as an off guard. He's a really high level shooter, not quite to the same degree that someone like Marcus Howard is, where Howard is like genuinely like you could argue coming out of college for, especially for someone who's undrafted, is like one of the best shooters in the world. But Powell is actually big enough and strong enough to survive on defense, where Howard probably isn't. And it's kind of I'll end on this note, because I think it's sort of a big picture point with both. Not that you're building around Powell, and not that you're building around Emmanuel Quickley, but it emphasizes the importance of getting someone eventually like Cade Cunningham, and like, no shit, like Cade Cunningham's going to be one of the five best players in the world, but someone in that, as Jake Rosen put it, that big initiator mold. Because if you have, and I was just thinking about this with Dallas and Tyrell Terry last night, and a little bit with Seth Curry, if you have a 6'6" to 6'8" guy who can essentially play point guard, it gives you the ability to add these smaller shooters around him. And that's okay, because someone like Powell, someone like Quickley, even though they're 6'2", they don't have to play point guard, because they can play off the ball on offense and then guard down a couple of positions at the other end, because the nominal point guard is guarding small forwards. And to be fair, part of the Knicks' thinking is that RJ Barrett does fit that mold to some degree. And obviously he's not the talent that a Luka is. He's not the talent that a Cade Cunningham is. But RJ being the man on the ball, you can play some lineups where either a Miles Powell or Emmanuel Quickley is nominally playing the two guard, and then they can just swap over on defense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to look at it. And I hope both those guys find some success. You know, obviously both players that had their own merits. Well, actually they're kind of like interesting cases, because Quickley had, I think, a little bit higher of a profile coming into Kentucky than what he wound up doing there. But, you know, still managed to put together a good 2-year college career. Powell, I think, I don't remember what his like ESPN 100 ranking was, but it was not super duper high. I think he was maybe 30 something, and managed to put himself, you know, after a 4-year career in conversations for the National Player of the Year. So he sort of had an opposite trajectory where he shot himself up. And to your point, yeah, I do think if he had come out last year, there was real buzz that he could have been an early second round pick. So this, in many ways, you know, if teams were just sort of sleeping on him this year, is a, you know, it could potentially be a really good signing for the Knicks here. And he's, you know, certainly worth taking a chance on, because he ultimately came back. I feel kind of bad for him. He came back with an attempt to try to win a national title for Seton Hall. And, you know, I think a lot of people thought there was, you know, if they got just hot enough, there was a chance that they could have competed for one. But yeah, it's, I think, a really good signing by them, and a good chance to take. And one that I feel, you know, it probably, like I said, kind of dulls the sting of last night a little bit, because this one makes me feel a little warm and fuzzy. So good move all around by the Knicks, if they're strictly trying to get to me and make me feel better about last night. But unless you had anything else to add, I think we could probably wrap up this episode. We're probably going to have a lot of sort of shorter episodes over the next few days, just kind of breaking down all this various stuff that happens. But yeah, I feel good about the Powell signing. the extra cuts are, whatever they are. You know, most of them I expected. The Wooten one was a little off guard, but it is what it is, I guess. It's the new regime cleaning house of the previous regime, so it was to be somewhat expected. So I feel okay about all the moves going on today.
Yeah, I mean, it all just feels like a preamble for hopefully for something bigger. Fascinated to see what they'll do. I think I said it a few days ago. I'll say it again. I think we're going to be surprised by someone they go after. We were certainly surprised by some of the stuff in the draft. So I hope this is a more pleasant surprise, but we will see how it goes. Until next time, be good. Again, go back, check out all of our draft content. We did a bunch of episodes. Alex, I know the draft guys are probably tired of talking to us, but maybe we'll have someone on in the next couple of days or next few weeks to break down Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quigley more in depth. But until then, be good, and we will talk to all of you soon.